Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Anwa Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lowther, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Anwa Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to NucleCast. I'm your guest host, Jim Howe, joined here by Executive Director of OADI, the Oklahoma Aerospace and Defense Innovation Institute, General Robin Rand, who's graced us with a former episode talking about his military career. We're going to talk now about what OADI is up to and what it brings to the defense establishment. But first, how did OADI come about and how did you get involved with the University of Oklahoma?
Good afternoon, Jim. Thanks again, and I hope I don't bore people. Maybe I did in the first one, but OADI. So I'll give you the short version. While I was still on active duty at Air Force Global Strike Command, Dr. Tomas Diaz de la Rubia was at Purdue, and I went out for Purdue for a symposium, and a lot of it was on strategic deterrence, and I was asked to be do a presentation for this 2 or 3 day event at Purdue. As I retired, Dr. Diaz de la Rubia and I stayed in contact, and he'd asked if I'd be interested in, you know, in working with him and trying to increase the Purdue's ability, you know, in the defense industry, if you will. He subsequently was transferred and accepted a job at the University of Oklahoma. And I went there with him probably, this was now 2020, right before COVID hit. And I was just kind of a special advisor or consultant, if nothing else. And Tomas is a brilliant man, and he's got a lot of vision. And he had this vision that he wanted to start this Aerospace Defense Innovation Institute because his job is the Vice President of Research and Partnerships at the University of Oklahoma. So he had the vision. And he asked me to help stand this up and build maybe a charter and then help select the first executive director. And so this is now happening in 2021, and I was all too happy to do that. And we kind of got some of the framework done, and then I was part of the selection committee and made a recommendation to Tomas who the first executive director should be, and a superb individual named Lieutenant General retired Gene Kirtland. And Gene was the first executive director, and he started OADI in very small, a handful of people, and doing great things. And he sadly was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And a year ago, in October of 23, he passed away. And because I was still working with Tomas just on the fringes of other areas and kind of lending him some advice where it was appropriate, he asked me if I would step in and as the interim executive director and then help in the search for a new executive director. And I certainly was all too willing to do that. I believe in OADI and what their mission is, and I'm very fond of Tomas, and I started there. It was a year ago. And, the rest is history. The interim turned into, and I told him, I said, Tomas, if you'll give me about 90 to 120 days to just kind of get my arms around this, I think for obvious reasons, we need to just regroup and then we'll get serious about hiring someone. And somewhere in that 90 to 120 days, he asked me if I'd transition from being the interim to the executive director. I did it. I said, yes, I would. I don't live in Norman. I go down there a couple times a month, spend some time there, but as the executive director, it's still a 24/7 responsibility. So that's how I ended up, you know, associated with the great University of Oklahoma, the Sooners.
So looking at, you know, we know your resume, we've heard your 40-year career, and you did pretty much everything the Air Force has to offer, from flying fighter jets, deploying all over the world, training command, defense policy in the Pentagon, and of course, ending up at Global Strike Command. But your team is pretty impressive as well. Can you talk a little bit about who you've got there and what sort of capabilities they bring?
It's very impressive. So we're small, but we're growing. But we're lean and mean. But when I came on board, I told Tomas, I said, Tomas, I love Colorado and I'm not leaving Colorado. I'm not going to move my wife, Kim, and I to Norman. But we needed to have someone that's there. So if I am in the civilian sector, I would be called the CEO, the chief executive officer. And the civilian comparatively is a COO, the chief operating officer. Our COO, which we don't call him that, we call him the deputy executive director, is Colonel retired Drew, goes by Growler Allen. And he's nothing short of brilliant. And he is full-time, hands-on, and he runs the day-to-day operations. And the handful of people, we have two or three charter members that were with OADI from the stand-up. One of them is Lieutenant General retired Don Whittakam, who was the Air Force's chief of logistics and maintenance when he retired many years ago. We call him the A4. Our chief of staff is wonderful. Cliff is amazing, a 20-year Army officer, well steeped in the academia world because he was at Purdue. He came here with Tomas, a great administrative support. You've met Mandy Crockett and you've dealt with her. She's phenomenal. We have some phenomenal faculty members from OU that are part of our team, and they're really the bridge. And now we're growing. We're going to bring on some more business development, some program managers that will focus on the four areas that we'll talk about, I know, in a minute. But back to Drew is our deputy executive director. He was an F-15 fighter pilot in the Air Force, went to test pilot school, and then became, I think, probably the first airman to fly, be checked out both in the F-22 and the F-35. And he commanded a wing that was doing a lot of some very, very difficult work for us, and just brings a wealth of experience in, again, our areas. And Don Whittakam brings a wealth of experience in one of our areas that we concentrate on. And then these faculty members are incredible. I mean, talk about big-brained people, researchers and engineers who are just amazing. So, yeah, I really pull down the GPA there and the average IQ, you know, while I'm working around these people. But I think, you know, the question begs, what is OADI? Okay, so the University of Oklahoma has some really smart people steeped in research and engineering. And in University of Oklahoma, where it's located, also is close to Oklahoma City, which is steeped in defense industry. There's a lot of defense industry. And it also has Tinker Air Force Base, which is steeped in Air Force sustainment and modernization of an ever-increasingly aging fleet. So there's a lot of synergy. And OADI, our job, as I see it, is we have internal partners, which is the university and the faculty, and the support of President Harris, who's amazing. And we connect these researchers and engineers with our external partners, who are defense industry and the Department of Defense, when it relates to defense matters and global security challenges. And we do this with these resources of a major defense university research university with the defense industry and Department of Defense partners. You know, and what we do is we've nailed it down that we concentrate on four areas: spectrum dominance, sustainment modernization resilience, cyberspace and information dominance, and international security policy. Those are the areas that we help bridge, if you will, challenges to find solutions. And we use our researchers and what OU is good at, and we try to help industry and Department of Defense, you know, again, conquer these challenges. That's what OADI does. And again, those four focus areas. So we're not going to cure cancer. We're not going to solve world hunger. We concentrate on those four areas. So.
And so with DOD, is it almost exclusively working with Air Force or also with the other services?
Yes. A little bit with the other services, but candidly, as the Aerospace Defense Innovation Institute, we are more focused on the Air Force. The Space Force is an area that we think we can bring to bear. But we will have relationships with the other services as well. Aerospace and defense. So the word defense needs to be underlined.
I'm always amazed how many aviation assets the other services have, aside from the Air Force. It's pretty
extensive. And I see that growing. Candidly, we're more centric now. I'm going to be candid. We're only three and a half years old, you know. And I would tell you that our focus has been more on Air Force related challenges because that's where we started. That's where our expertise. But I see us definitely, you know, opening that aperture as we continue to grow and expand.
So another trend in the last probably 20, 30 years is about bringing in joint partners, you know, the F-35 development, for example, the AUKUS agreement now with the Australians and the Brits. Are you working with any international partners or partner nations?
No, I would say we're not, but not intentionally and not because we don't want to. It's just, again, you have to get your foot in the door. You have to start somewhere. But you nailed it. A lot of these challenges that we face is going to include our partners, particularly you mentioned the F-35. I mean, there's going to be a lot of countries that are already flying it that will continue to fly it. And there's other areas. You know, Tinker is the home of the AWACS, and the E-7 will be the replacement for what the folks at Tinker fly for the airborne and management system. And so, you know, Australia is already operational in the E-7. So there's opportunities to work with our partner nations for sure. I think spectrum dominance, I just need to expand a little bit. OU, the University of Oklahoma, is renowned, is a leader in advanced radar research. It has been. And one of the reasons is it developed years ago, this advanced radar research center with focus on weather radar. And it makes sense. Think about where Oklahoma is and predicting tornadoes and storms and the devastation that can have. And it became a leader in that area. Well, little did we know that the applications of weather radars have some very, very strong defense applications. And so spectrum dominance is something that we would use advanced electromagnetic spectrum technologies. And we're seeing that's not just limited to the Air Force. That would be something that could, you know, cross into other services and other nations. Sustainment and modernization resilience, that is largely concentrated on the Air Force, okay? We're not expertise in how to help with, you know, what the Navy or the Marines or the Army systems are, but, you know, with Tinker in our own backyard in the Air Force Sustainment Center right at Tinker, we're very involved in supporting the defense sustainment and modernization enterprise as it relates to the Air Force. We team with Oak Ridge National Laboratory. We have our own, and Oak Ridge is a leader in advanced manufacturing. And we have our own Sooner Advanced Manufacturing Lab that we opened up, you know, about 10 months ago. And this has humongous implications for defense. I mean, Jim, we're flying and maintaining you know, when I was the commander of Global Strike Command, the newest B-52 was made in 1961. Do the math. That is 64 years old. Imagine driving a car, you know, at 75 miles an hour on the highway. That's 61 years old. Okay. Yet these are the challenges. And we have your son as a KC-46, but we're still flying lots of KC-135s. And that airplane is as old as the B-52. And our younger airplanes are 25, 30 years old. So sustainment and modernization is huge. And teaming with tinkers is so important that we do it. And we have some brilliant engineers and researchers that are part of the University of Oklahoma that can, again, help bridge these gaps and help with that. Cyberspace and information dominance. I don't think you can be a legitimate defense institute, innovation institute, if cyber and information dominance isn't one of your focus areas. That domain, the cyber domain, as we know, is so critical. We used to be solely focused on air, land, and sea. Well, we as a nation have to be very focused on cyber and space. And so that's an area that we need to be very involved in. And then I'll just wrap it up about our four focus areas. International security policy. Again, how can you be a defense institute if you're not focused on what's going on around the world? The world's on fire. And it's not just stuff we build or we fix or we make. It's how do you apply it to ensure what? Security. And just look around, you know, and that's what we're ultimately here is to provide our nation that umbrella of security. And so that's a very important area that we need to make sure we're really wrapped tight in. So that's what OADI is focusing on. We're better at set spectrum dominance and sustainment modernization. We're growing in the cyber and the international security.
So with that, we're going to take a very short break, be right back to maybe dive a little bit deeper into the four focus areas of OADI. Thank you, General Rand. We'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
Welcome back to NucleCast. We have the distinguished presence of General Robin Rand, who is now the Executive Director at OADI, the Oklahoma Aerospace and Defense Innovation Institute. I want to stress the innovation because that's what it seems like everything you're doing is very, very innovative in your four focus areas. So you talked about spectrum dominance. You talked about the University of Oklahoma and their radar expertise, how it came from the weather radars. But as you get into this for defense purposes, is there technological leaps that will help out in the civilian marketplace as well?
I'm sure there are. Again, I think we've limited our focus to more the defense application of these areas. University of Oklahoma, though, and I am not at all fluent enough to talk about, has other equivalent counterparts to OADI that are very focused on weather change. So Tomas, when he had this vision for OADI, he also had vision for other institutes. So there are three or four other institutes that are very much locked in on, you know, other applications as it applies to, I think, the non-defense sectors of what's going on, you know, in our world. So I'm not terribly fluent on those other areas as probably I should be. I'll get more fluent, but I think we're pretty much OADI is more focused on, as I said, the defense applications that these four focus areas bring.
Understood. So you also talked about Oak Ridge National Lab and their additive manufacturing expertise. I've seen a lot of that firsthand with a lot of the work they've done for the nuclear sector. How do the breakthroughs in additive manufacturing really help out? Can you kind of talk us through a little bit how it helps the maintainers, how it helps the force readiness?
Well, look, can I give one example that maybe will, I think, summarize it? I use the B-52, which is just a phenomenal platform. I'm not being pejorative at all. The B-52 is, as I said, 61 years old, but it'll probably be close to, if not older than 100 years old before we stop flying it. It's a phenomenal weapon system doing phenomenal work today. But a 61-year-old platform, the parts aren't being made anymore. Okay, so that's an example. Additive manufacturing is so critical because we can't go to the company now and order off the shelf, hey, I need this part or I need that part. So we either figure out how we don't need those parts, which we do, or we have to manufacture them. So Tinker and what Oak Ridge brings is a lot of, you know, AI and 3D. Now, there's some limitations and there's some provisions. You know, you just can't make something 3D and then say, okay, we're going to now go put it on a weapon system. But those are some of the out-of-the-box thinking, that innovation thinking that has to happen. And Oak Ridge can help us tremendously with that. And that's the way of the future, okay? And that's how we are helping the maintainers today. We're providing them parts that candidly aren't there. And when you're out of parts, the only thing you can do then is either go to other airplanes and cannibalize is the term we use, and you start taking off parts of other airplanes, but you get into a real rut when you do that, okay? When you break airplanes to fix airplanes, that's kind of a tough proposition. But you want to have the spare part inventory healthy enough that you don't have to cannibalize off other planes, particularly when we don't have the numbers that we used to have as well. We don't have the number of B-52s or KC-135s or you name it, the weapon systems that we're used to. So this is why it's so important to this sustainment and modernization piece.
And is that sort of modernization with things like 3D printing, is that also being applied to the missile force? I know we've got Sentinel program moving along, but we've got a lot of older missiles out there and missile systems.
We're not as tied into the nuclear part as we are with the conventional forces, but absolutely. I mean, the Minuteman III was probably made when we first employed it in the early 80s to be a 10 or 15, 20 year system. Wow, look at it now. It's, you know, and we're hopefully going to replace it with the Sentinel. But in the meantime, we've got to continue to maintain and you know, near and dear to me, our Air Force Global Strike maintainers are heroes of mine. The work they do to ensure that the missile field and that those launch facilities and that those warheads and everything it takes to make sure that that weapon will actually come out of the ground, will be launched, and then get to its intended target is nothing short of miraculous. But it does speak to the need to, in my opinion, to modernize, and we're on that path to do that and replace the Minuteman III with a new weapon system. And I would tell you, if you want my opinion, this has nothing to do with OADI. And I can give my opinion now. We're late to need. Okay? When I was in Global Strike, I and the commander of Strategic Command said, 2030, we're late to need. You know, we don't have any built-in slop anymore. So if you want to maintain and to be a good deterrent, you have to be reliable and you have to be something that deters the enemy. And reliability is a huge part of that.
It's been both heartwarming and a little bit nerve-wracking to watch the modernization effort over the last, you know, 8 or 10 years, only in that it never seems to get quite the funding it really needs. And it's not just the frontline systems, but all the auxiliary systems and the materials that go into these systems. It's a very expensive proposition. And when I look around, for example, National Nuclear Security Administration, which runs a lot of these facilities that are built in the 50s and 60s and are falling apart, and chunks of concrete are lying on people's heads, that sort of thing, it's something that we really need as a nation to spend a lot of time thinking through.
Yeah, it's vital. And again, I no longer consider myself by any means an expert on this because, one, I'm dated. But as I left the rodeo in September of 2018, 6 years ago, I was heartened to see that this was a bipartisan decision shared by both sides of the aisle in Congress, that a realization that we did need to modernize the three legs of the triad. And the other thing I'm heartened to see is that, you know, ever since we've had a triad, 1961, I think, is when we finally had submarines, ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and the bomber, the nuclear bombers, every administration, Republican or Democrat, has been consistent in two areas. One, we need a triad. And two, that we were not going to adopt a no first use policy. That's been consistent from Eisenhower to Biden. And it doesn't matter what side of the aisle it's been. And under President Obama's administration, as he was leaving office, he supported that we replace, that we come up with the new bomber, the B-21. We replaced the ICBM with the Sentinel, then called Ground-Based Strategic Deterrence, that we replaced the air-launched cruise missile with the long-range standoff missile. And those were consistent decisions, and we're on that path to do it. And we've remained on that path, and I think the advocacy we've received from certainly the Department of Defense, our Secretaries of Defense, since that time, our strategic command commanders, the current one, Tony Cotton, the current Air Force Global Strike Commander, Tom Bussier, they are advocating and articulating every day to ensure that we modernize our nuclear enterprise. And I don't think we should turn back from those efforts, but it's not easy. It's not easy. And it's, you know, it relatively, in the big scheme of things, it's doesn't take up the majority of the defense budget, but it's not cheap. And because we're having to do so many things at the same time, it can be a little daunting when it comes to how do you resource these modernization efforts. So I don't know right. If you wanted to go down that road or not, but that's what I spent my 3 years as the commander of. The many things I did, the one area I always did was the advocacy for the new bomber, replacing the ICBM, and replacing the Alcum with the LRSO, as well as replacing our helicopters that are out there for the missile fields, for providing that critical, you know, support of armed and overhead escort. And we're making headway. We're making headway, but it doesn't happen fast or cheaply.
Understood. So another of your key principles here is looking at the cyber information dominance issue. Can you talk a little bit about that, the importance of it, and how it really applies to warfighting moving forward?
I will candidly tell you it's the least proficient thing that I have, probably, and I know the least about. But I was smart enough to realize that without cyber dominance, we couldn't even taxi, let alone take off an airplane, okay? We are very, very reliant upon some of the technologies that we now have to employ our weapon systems that are absolutely contingent upon us having control of the cyber domain. I would tell you that if we are in another shooting match, it's not going to happen by a bomb being dropped on another foreign country. The first act of war is going to be some type of cyber attack here on the homeland, whether that's something to do with our banking systems, our ATMs, how we pump our gas. Think about how reliant we are, okay, on the internet today. Imagine internet goes out. Okay, on a major city, metropolitan area. Okay, so cyber is absolutely critical. It's a domain as well as space that we have to garner and take the high ground on. we were had the luxury of feeling like we controlled the air, land, and sea domain. But the cyber and the space domain is something that our current adversaries are very, very focused on, and we got to ensure that we're equally as focused. I'm not the expert on this, though, but I would have been the recipient of having that dominance as a warfighter. And I'm forever grateful for our cyber warriors and our space warriors who ensure that we get to do the things that we need to do on the land, sea, and air domain.
And much of this ties into the work that Space Force is doing with a lot of the satellite constellations and communications networks, that sort of thing. All fascinating and very important work. The fourth pillar of your initiatives there is in the international security policy. Can you talk a little bit, sure, if there's any specifics that you're looking at?
Sure. I know we're running close on time. Let me quickly say, first of all, having weapons and having systems, that's great. And we want to have those things, but it has to be tied to something. And what it's tied to is national security. Okay. And you have to look at the world today, what's going on in the Indo-PACOM arena, what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, what's going on in our own backyard, and where China is filling some of the vacuums with some of the places in Central and South America. And no one can tell me that the world's, you know, not a challenging place, okay? And there has to be policy that aligns, and sometimes policy lags behind, whether it's in how do we counter, you know, unmanned aerial vehicles or unoccupied UAVs? Well, policy lags behind capability sometimes. And so we got to make sure that we are also helping the policy and decision makers be influenced and know the things that have to be in place for this to happen. And so that's an area for international security policy that we want to try to influence, and we want to be affluent about it. We want to help educate folks about why is a strategic deterrence necessary, okay? And why do we need that to absolutely deter and assure our adversaries and to assure, you know, our partners. So I don't think you can be a legitimate defense industry or institute if you don't tie it back to what's going on in the world and back to security, international security at large.
And that all makes great sense. If our audience wanted to keep track of OADI and look at what you're doing in a little bit more detail, how could they do that?
Yeah, I would ask them to go to the University of Oklahoma. We have an OADI website. We've just updated it. It's very robust. We're trying to keep it fresh and current and bringing up to speed everything we're doing. We got a lot of initiatives underway. That'd be my best advice. Or the, you know, our email's on there. They can contact us at the website on how they can get a hold of the office and go from there.
Well, General Robin Rand, first, thanks for your service to our nation, but you're continuing to serve at OADI as the executive director and doing great innovative work there. So thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I hope our viewers will take a look at your website and follow the great work you're doing, because it is important, actually vital. And currently,
Jim, let me just close with this, and this is important. You know, I'm honored to do this, and I feel a great part, but the greatest strength we have still is the men and women who wear our nation's cloth. And I just need to be mindful of them. We all do. And we need to have some really gratitude in our hearts for what these soldiers, sailor, and airmen, Marines, Guardians, Coasties do for our nation, not only for the United States, but the world at large. And I just couldn't finish without a huge shout out and thanks for the service and sacrifice they and their families make for you and me, for our behalf, for my grandchildren. You know, my oldest grandchild turned 20 today. And so on behalf of him and his 17-year-old brother and his sister who's 14, thank you for what they do to ensure that we have that umbrella of security.
Great, great parting words. General, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and we will now end our edition of NucleCast, and thank you very much for listening in.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.